You're listening to the Social Media Show, sponsored by NILC, a training company providing over 500 business, IT and project management training courses. I'm your host, Jonathan Pollinger, and I'm a social media trainer. In each week's episode of this podcast, I chat with an inspiring personality from the world of business or social media. As well as listening to the podcast, you can watch the show live on Mondays at 9 a.m. on my Facebook page at facebook.com/PollingerSocial, where you can also catch the replay. In this week's episode, I talk with top PR man and founder of 10 Yetis Digital, Andy Barr. We talk about a wide range of subjects, including Harry and Meghan, digital marketing, PR, social media, podcasting and brand. I hope you enjoy the show. Good morning and welcome everybody to the Social Media Show, whether you're watching live, watching the replay or listening to the podcast. Special welcome to my guest today, Andy Barr. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Monday to everybody.
Happy Monday to you. And I saw that you tweeted earlier that it's a bit of a sad Monday today. Is that right? Where does that come from?
It's absolute rubbish, peddled by idiot PR people like myself. So yeah, Blue Monday's grown in, you know, in
Blue popular. Monday, that's right. Yeah.
I'm being completely honest, we used to use it as a PR tactic as well until a good few years ago when Ben Goldacre on Twitter very publicly called me out. And I think he emailed me as well, actually, or that might have been about another thing I annoyed him about. And said, look, it's rubbish, stop peddling it. It doesn't actually help the mental health cause. So now, you know, the last couple of years, I've really sort of tried to say, look, you know, stop pushing it. If you are feeling a bit down, my DMs are open. Come and chat to me. Everyone knows I'm a friendly, caring soul.
That's a more positive approach then to Blue Monday. I like that. Cool. So I think we'll start off pretty much certainly most of the articles that I've read about Harry and Meghan lately, particularly if they're related to brand, seem to have a quote from your good self in them. How did that come about?
Well, it's really cool, actually. So I have a side hustle called Alerta, which is really simple, alerta.co.uk. You go and paste in the URL of the product you want to buy, and it tells you when the price drops. So that's the pimping bit. But basically, I kind of built a name as a so-called retail expert, and I had loads of media like Sky News, Daily Mail, Daily Express, to name a few, come to me asking from a retail and brand point of view, you know, what are the consequences, or, you know, how much are Meghan and Harry going to make from splitting off from the royal family and peddling their own wares. So yeah, it was really surreal. Ended up, rather disappointed. They did a Channel 5 thing that they didn't actually air, probably because they realized I have a lack of talent. And yeah, it went absolutely crazy. I think at the last count, there was about 200, radio and print outlets use the interview.
Wow. Yeah, amazing. And to answer that question then, how much are they going to be worth? Did you actually come up with a figure on that?
I did, yeah. So rather worryingly for people who know me, I did some actual research and looked at the sort of typical revenue that the wider royal family are making in a year, and kind of tried to factor in, obviously, Meghan and Harry are going to have a really aggressive sales and promotion team behind them. So I looked at basically previous revenue for the royals and tried to sort of forecast what they may do, because I don't believe they're going to, you know, these 500 products that they've trademarked, you know, that's not going to be the big money, is it? The big money is going to be endorsements. You know, the sort of bigger ticket, you know, the kind of MasterCard World Cup promotion stuff, yeah. is where the big money's going to come from. So kind of look at that, and I think, you know, I think I said they conservatively do around sort of 400 million a year, but that's not taking into account, obviously, that, you know, they've got a foothold in the sort of Far East and Asian markets where brands like Moncler, Burberry, you know, they've spent millions, if not more, trying to create an audience over there. They've already got that because of their title. So you know, that money that I've sort of forecast probably doesn't take into account all the money or the potential revenue they could make over there.
So would I be right in saying, you know, you seem to be implying there that they're going to associate themselves with luxury brands and, as you mentioned, sort of more sponsorship deals, I guess, sort of like speaking engagements, launches, that kind of thing. Do you think they'll even get into sort of like the more, I guess, tackier side of things like mugs and T-shirts and that sort of thing? Do you think they'll leave that alone, or do you think they'll go for that as well?
I don't know. I don't think they will. I think they're slightly higher end. I think if they do stuff that, you know, you've got to think the kind of Harrods, Fortnum and Mason kind of stuff. No, I can't see them lending a name to, you know, Primarni or, you know, H&M or someone like that, or even the likes of Burberry. I just think that, you know, she in particular has got this sort of ethical, you know, stance. She wants to work with brands that do things in a super ethical way. So I think they'll be really choosy, but they will go really high end. As I say, I kind of see these, you know, these big global sporting events is an opportunity for them to marry up with brands like MasterCard and Visa and people like that. And, you know, sort of lend their name to the product, I guess.
Yeah, because of course Harry's got experience with his Invictus Games, hasn't he, as well on the sports front. So that's a nice tie-in and useful bit of experience there. So turning to yourself and PR. So how long has 10 Yetis Digital been going now?
So we've been going 15 years this year, which is obviously, wow, you know, a miracle, more luck than judgment. But yeah, you know, we're really lucky. 15 years. You know, we've grown revenue every year that we've you know, been going.
Brilliant. And you, I'm not sure when, but well, I'll ask you the question. When did you, because it was 10 Yetis, wasn't it? And then you sort of, or maybe 10 Yetis PR, and you renamed to Digital. When did that come about?
So I think it was, oh God, I don't know. I think it was about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more. Right. But basically, okay. Our heritage and history is in public relations. That's what we're most well known for. But we use a lot of other tactics as part of our PR campaigns that are digital marketing. So obviously we have a social media team, we have a video team, which is one guy, but it sounds good if you say team. We have graphic designers, we have PR people, you know, content writers, web developers. I think, you know, but basically we use all of those. These are all in-house people, because I'm tight, I don't want to outsource things. So I wanted to move everything in-house. And I think, you know, we use social media campaigns to support our PR campaigns. We use obviously graphic design to support our campaigns, and microsites through web developers to support our PR campaigns. And we kind of realized actually, you know, we're more of a digital agency. You know, back then, 5-6 years ago, you know, I think we were slightly ahead of other people doing that, which kind of fits in with our history, really, because we started at a time when online PR was really taking off, and we branded ourselves as an online PR agency to begin with, because we knew the power. My business partner, who I co-founded the agency with, you know, we knew the power of the authority web links, you know, and what they were doing for client sites. So we always did online PR. We were really lucky. And I think the rebrand just reflected a bit more of our wider services and what we can do to help people.
So clearly it's digital services that you offer, but could you be a bit more specific around that for perhaps people that don't understand your world as much? Which would you say is the most popular service that you provide clients with?
Well, public relations still the biggest part of our business, but you know, we have independent video projects that we're doing for people that are nothing to do with PR. You know, people coming to us for online videos. You know,
okay, that's interesting.
So, like social media content, for example, animated short, you know, 15-second video clips for use or for deployment across social media is probably one of our biggest growth areas over the last few years. You know, in terms of creating content for wider clients that have nothing to do with PR. Same with social media. We manage a whole host of you know, day-to-day social media for some absolutely huge brands. You know, we have done over the years, again, and nothing to do with PR. So It's those kind of campaigns. But where I think we're maybe a bit different, and maybe we're a bit different because there's a few agencies now that do what we do. I think where we were first is that we really pioneered cross-platform campaigns. Now, that will annoy people who are probably older than me and think that they've done it already. But I think we took it to the next level in terms of creating content that would resonate with journalists and get loads of write-ups. So we used videos, we used microsites, we used widget websites, all these silly little things to create hugely successful campaigns.
And you know, it's interesting you're saying about how not necessarily as part of an in-house campaign, but you're actually sort of contracting out your creative sort of services. You mentioned like video and content writing. Do you think that's because it's harder for brands to get seen now, and so you really do have to be quite creative and clever and entertaining with content, social media posts these days compared with say 5 years ago?
Oh, very much so. You know, there's a whole plethora of people that are firing out some amazing content, but there's only so much space out there. You know, there's only so much, there's only so many magazines, there's only so many online websites, you know, there's only so many places that you can place this content. So your content has to work really, really hard. And it's definitely got harder over the last 10 years. You know, authority link building has got really hard. It's totally different to where we were, you know, sort of 15 years ago. And when you think we got into it, or how we got into it, was really simple. I'd always worked in-house in PR for some horrible companies, and I can go through those in a minute if you want. But and I thought I was going to set up an agency. It'd be a doddle. Turns out it's not. We started off doing sort of personal finance PR, and one of our biggest clients back in the day was My Voucher Codes, and they said, look, could you have a go at doing consumer PR? And I did, and it was so much easier than personal finance PR. So I thought, screw that, let's do that instead. And that's kind of how we were born as an agency. It's probably a bit more to it than that, but that's the simple version.
So most of your clients sort of on the consumer side now, or has that expanded sort of across industries again?
Jonathan, we will take whoever has the money. We work across every sector. You know, there's some agencies out there that like to specialize in one thing. And I guess, you know, the one area we've always worked in is affiliate marketing. We've worked with some of the biggest affiliate brands in the world, you know, and we're really lucky to have done that, both consumer facing, so people like Confused.com, Go Compare, My Voucher Codes, you know, Voucher Cloud. But then on the B2B side as well, we're really lucky. We work with Awin, who are the largest affiliate network in the world. You know, so we've kind of carved a niche there because we know the sector really well. But wider than that, you know, we work with everything from sex toy clients through to, you know, through to religious insurance companies. Our results, you know, get people coming to us.
That's quite a spectrum of clients that
yeah, we shouldn't get the pictures mixed up in those. That could be very awkward.
So mentioned sort of a few different types of services there in terms of trends this year. You know, video is continuing to dominate. We've got the rise of the rise of the influencer. But personally, I think that the whole sort of influencer thing might reach its peak this year. Let's talk about that one. What's your thought on influencers?
It's really difficult, isn't it? I think there's definitely a massive inflated bubble in the UK and America. If you contrast that against the work that we and some of our clients are doing across, Scandinavia, France, Germany, influencers are a lot cheaper to work with over there, and
that's interesting.
And the results are a lot better as well. I think, you know, it feels like 2018 and 2019 were very much about influencer fraud and how can we spot that? How can we stop that? You know, we use tools like Hype Auditor to run all of the influencers through that we work with, but I feel like there's going to be a price correction soon. You know, I think that I think that you know, prices will drop. People have definitely seen through, I think, a lot of the influencers. So if I can't remember the influencer's name, actually, you know, the lady who had, I think, was it 3 million followers or something, and she sold 32 T-shirts on the back of it. It just shows what absolute bullshit sort of industry that's kind of fallen into now.
Yeah, and I think there's more realization from the public now as well, aren't there? They're a bit more skeptical now compared with the past, now that their understanding of it has sort of increased.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that I think, you know, there are some brands where they expect an immediate return from influencer marketing, and it's just not, you know, that's not the true, I mean, that would be brilliant, but that's not the true, you know, value that maybe they bring. I think people are looking for this short-term hit all the time. And really, you need to be consistently working with influencers over and over again, you know, to really help tell your brand story, which is a terrible phrase, and I hate myself for saying it. But, you know, to sort of tell your story, and then you get the longer term benefits of that. It's very much like, you know, the authority link building stuff that we do from an SEO point of view. You know, yes, you might get a good hit of traffic initially from you know, an authority link, you know, say if someone like Metro, you know, links to you, you're going to get a decent hit of traffic. But are those people relevant? Probably not. Are they in the buying cycle at that time? Probably not. But the longer term sort of 3, 6, 9 month value of getting a load of links like that is that your keywords across the board will rise. And I think what a sorry state of affairs that I'm telling a link building analogy about influencer marketing. But, you know, it is very good for that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. With regard to content, where do you see content going? What's going to be content that sort of like works? Is it going to continue to be video? And if so, what sort of types of video? I think you mentioned shorter videos earlier. Do you think that's where it's at? Like really short videos, sort of like 5-10 second kind of thing?
Well, I keep banging on about stuff like this because I personally love it. But then if I look at the stats, well, no, I'll pretend it's me, but it's not. Someone in our team told me the other day that videos are actually not performing very well in terms of the short video clips on things like Instagram. You know, they work well on Twitter, but not on Instagram, which is where every brand kind of wants to be at the minute. So I think, you know, it's about people understanding what works well for every platform, which is a really cliched thing to say, but truly understanding that for the brand that you're working with. You know, the days of just being able to create one video and then, you know, popping it across Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
It's kind of almost cringe. These are all the things that I personally do. So so I'm willing to take that on the nose that I do that personally. But, you know, for the brands that we work with, it's about really understanding what works for every channel. And I'm not just paying lip service to that, you know, really working it out.
And what other advice would you give around content? Do you think, I mean, in terms of text content and length, there's quite a bit of debate about this at the moment, particularly around Instagram captions. Do you think Instagram captions should be on the short side, or do you think it's a space where people can tell their stories? Or again, perhaps do you put it in, look at the sort of brand and look at the audience and decide from there?
Well, I think I'm all about brevity. I don't think people do, you know, really read captions. You know, they're looking at what's going on the screen. You know, they're not going to read that much text. One thing that I do think is coming back is kinetic text in videos. So, you know, obviously the words appearing on screen as the voiceover goes as well. I think when they're in a really jazzy style, our designers love that. Can you make it pretty? You know, when it's done in that style, I think it works really well. And this is kind of a bit of shameless whoring, but a good example. So we do this days of the year calendar. I won't go into it, but we did one of our designers did a really, really cool kinetic text short clip to go with it. And we've been doing this calendar now for 5 years. And that little video that he did performed better than anything we've done probably in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years. In terms of engagement and results. So that kind of stuff, you know, I can see coming back. That's stuff we were doing, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, and we shamelessly robbed it off the Comedy Channel because I really loved their ident. And I was like, right, I want all of our stuff to look like this straight away. And it kind of went out again, and now it's coming back.
That's interesting. So, I mean, I've not even heard that expression before. So how does kinetic text...
Maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe I'm using the wrong word.
I'm sure you're not. How does kinetic text differ from captions then? It sounds as though it's a bit more animated.
It's just prettier. So, you know, okay. It's about text zooming in and out and
you know,
folding into itself and things like that. As I say, the calendar promo stuff that we've been putting across, you know, every channel, it does have a different video per channel. But if you look at that, you know, that those videos for me are absolutely on the nose. You know, they're only, what, I think between sort of 5 and 10 seconds long, but they're just working so well.
Yeah, I'll look at that. I mean, that's a good tip for people to, I mean, that's kind of, I would say, you know, pushing ahead there, because most people are at the stage where they're not even putting, well, most small businesses aren't really at the stage where they're putting even captions on the video, which I think is important these days. So that's an interesting one, Matt. What about the channels themselves? What do you think, how do you think the landscape's going to pan out this year? Do you see Instagram becoming more popular? We've got Facebook that kind of like seems to continue to grow, but it's probably going to hit a plateau at some point. LinkedIn and new ones like TikTok coming in. Where how do you see the landscape with regard to the platforms?
Well, I'm 43 and I set up an account on TikTok about 6 months ago and feel hideously out of touch. My daughter, who's 8, I found that she got an account and she'd posted about 30 videos. So
is she showing you how to use it?
She is. Well, ironically, we've got someone coming in. I think she's 12 in the next couple of weeks to do a lunch and learn. Probably with just me. That doesn't sound creepy. Anyway, let's move on. Anyway, she's coming in to show us how to use TikTok. And I love the platform. I think you can see already it's having that tipping point moment, the kind of like where that Twitter had. Do you remember when Stephen Fry went on Jonathan Ross and everyone on Twitter was really excited that someone was going to talk about it publicly? I think TikTok's having that now. Everyone's talking about it. Every brand wants to be on there. There are some fantastic brand accounts. There's three in particular that I love that we are nothing to do with. I just love watching their stuff. So RNLI, I think it's RNLI Brighton. Their content's fantastic. Gymshark is next level. The stuff that they're doing on there is absolutely brilliant. And the third one, who is the third? Oh, and the army have got 5 or 6 really, really good accounts on it. Now, obviously it's not fair because they get to shoot guns at things. So, and everyone would love to do that and have a fantastic channel. But the content that they're putting out is absolutely spot on. So I think, you know, I read something at the weekend or maybe on Friday about the rise of it and how Instagram's slowing down a little bit now. So I think they're going to make a big inroad into Instagram. Twitter, you know, who cares? Well, I care, actually. We get probably 70% of our business from my random, stupid Twitter account. We do actually have a company account now because the rest of the team picked on me and said that my account was not sensible enough a few years ago. So Twitter's always going to be all right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I heard there was a bit of a coup there. Did they not just sort of forcibly take the password off you or something? And
that was Instagram. I've got it back now. So I was sat at my desk and I noticed a load of the cool creative people were having a meeting. And I said, oh, what's this about? Because my desk is right next to where all the meetings happen. And they said, oh, we're just talking about the Instagram account. And I was like, oh, do you need me to come over? No. I've took it back now in like some sort of management coup, being the absolute dictator of a boss that I am. So the world is good again.
Cool. Just take this opportunity to see if anybody's got any questions. So if anybody wants to ask us anything at all about digital, PR, social media, marketing, anything like that, please do post in the comments, whether you're watching live or watching the replay. If you're listening to the podcast, head over to Facebook and you can post a comment there. So I noticed you just mentioned Twitter a couple of sentences back, and I kind of like get the sense there that you're a bit down on Twitter, and me too. I'm kind of a bit disappointed about how it's being run. Do you think there is a future for Twitter? Because I'm a bit kind of like gloomy.
Oh no, I love Twitter. I feel bad that I was down on Twitter. No, I love it. I think it's an absolutely fantastic platform. I think over the last sort of 6 to 12 months, I've probably got more engagement on Twitter than I've ever had before. I get so many random messages, some cool, some weird, some really bad. No, I love it. I think it pains me to say that I think Donald Trump is one of the reasons that Twitter is in my mind alone, maybe, obviously not in yours, but in my mind is actually doing so well. I think people check every morning to see what random nonsense he's splurted out. So no, I love Twitter.
Okay. And so do you, in terms of the company though, I mean, it's successful for yourself, but do you think it's headed in the right direction?
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, because of the sort of political bias and things like that. The way that they're running the business in general.
Well, all of that really, you know, I just see it's got a lot of problems in terms of bots and fake news and spam, limited growth in users. They haven't come out with a new feature in about 8 years. I'm a bit negative about Twitter, as you can tell.
Well, you sound really annoyed. What's happened?
I don't know. I just sort of fallen out of love with it, I think, because I really did. It used to be my favorite. And I just think it's just kind of like gone the wrong way. I think they're focusing on the wrong things and not listening to their users. I mean, a specific example would be, we all want an edit button, don't we? And Jack Dorsey kind of like ruled that out last week. And it's like, well, all the other social networks have got one, and it's what your users want. And you're saying, we're not going to have one. So I just don't think it's going in the right direction.
But that edit button, that's one thing that I kind of think, yeah, that's all right. I mean, we've known each other for ages. You know that I can't spell for toffee, and I constantly.
So it'd be good for you then.
Sorry?
It would be good for you then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, but then it probably showcases my personality a bit more, that I'm just a bit of a knobhead. Do you know what I mean? And that was reflected in the fact that I post a lot of typos in my tweets. And also, I think adding an edit button is kind of a bit dangerous as well, because it allows people to change the narrative of what they said. So they're going to say one thing, people are going to reply saying, look, you know, you know that's wrong for XYZ reasons, and people are changing. Now, that's a simplistic view, but I'm very simple, you know, in how I look at things. And unfortunately, I'm very simple, full stop. I'm not asked about having an edit button. There are some things that do annoy me about Twitter a lot. So say, for example, they're not in real time enough. Now, I don't know if this, so like the explore or the, like the featured section, it's not real time enough. For me, one of the best things about Twitter was that when something was breaking, when a story was breaking, it would get into that featured section. Now, I am guessing it's because Twitter has got so many checks in place now around fake news and around, you know, stories that aren't true. You know, like the Ollie Murs thing where he started a stampede on Oxford Street?
Yeah.
Heard a bang and stuff like that. And that was reported in real time. Now, I see there's a massive lag now between things happening and them appearing in that discover or
explore. Yeah, I've noticed that too. Yeah.
And not least things like, so one of our team, for example, is an influencer in her own right in the parenting sector. And I get, I always get her stuff appearing in my feed, at the top all the time. And that's cool, because I'm interested in what they're doing. They're funny, you know, their stuff's engaging. But I then get like a day later, whoever has just tweeted 56 minutes ago. And I go and look at it, and it's a tweet from like a day ago. And that to me is crap, isn't it? You know, and they could easily fix that. But I'm guessing their algorithm is broken, because they're so nervous about promoting something accidentally that's like far right or just fucking weird, you know, that shouldn't, you know, like let's talk about political stuff. You know, the Labour Party, for example, have got the most active, the best sort of functioning war machine on Twitter. They tell people to go and have a go at somebody, you know, in their secret WhatsApp group, and within 10 minutes, you know, that thing is trending and people are being attacked. Now, maybe it's because Twitter's looked at that and thought, well, that's not right, and we need to police that better. So mm-hmm. the wider effect is that all the sort of low level news gets thoroughly checked as well, which is important, but it just means it's not as real time as it was. And I think that that really annoys me that, you know, you're not really, that's the beauty of Twitter for me.
Yeah, fair point. I totally agree with you, and hopefully they'll improve the algorithm as we go on. A couple of people agreeing with you on the edit button. Adam and D James. I would just say on that that that's an issue also for all the other social networks that have managed to do it, namely Facebook and LinkedIn, for example. So that issue of people changing content to something maybe completely different than it was originally has been addressed and resolved. But moving on, great question. We haven't got much time left, but just getting a question from Adam quickly before we wrap up. Podcasts, flash in the pan or here for good? What's your view there with podcasts?
Very, very similar to blogging. You know, it's just sort of it's a natural evolution of blogging, isn't it? I love them. I listen to quite a few of them. I don't really listen to many industry ones, mainly sporting people. But, you know, I love them. I think they're absolutely fantastic. I think it's reaching that point where you need to get into it now because it's starting to become saturated. Just going back to Twitter, you know, I would dread to be a startup brand trying to create an audience on Twitter now. It's just, you know, it's difficult to cut through all the noise. You know, you're going to have to spend loads of money on ads to grow your audience. And I think podcast is kind of heading that sort of really commercial way now.
Yeah. But I think they're just really sort of taking off because it just sort of suits life in 2020. I think the fact that you can listen anytime you want on pretty much any device you want, wherever you want, you've just got that freedom, haven't you? And so people like that freedom and convenience. Just to finish off then, because we're on time, just a couple more things. Where can people find out more about you and Ten Yetis?
So at Ten Yetis on Twitter, really straightforward. Our website is www.tenyetis.co.uk. Just Google me. I've always wanted to say that. Google me, bitches. Yeah.
Fantastic. And one final question, which I ask all my guests. If you were to go for a drink, and I understand you're partial to the occasional glass or no, I won't say it, occasional glass of Prosecco, who would that be and why?
Well, it's Jamie Carragher. He's my absolute hero.
Okay.
You know, I think we're a similar age. Maybe he's a bit younger than me. But do you know when you're growing up and there's someone that's sort of very similar to you? I've done loads of creepy things, like a football magazine once asked, put a feature out asking for someone to write a feature on a sportsman that they love. And I did that. I did a triathlon a few years ago for to raise a bit of money for charity, and he actually personally tweeted and sent me a letter, and I just think it's took our love to a new level. So it would, you know, I'd like to say something. You know, I'm sure people say, you know, Mahatma Gandhi or whatever, or Nelson Mandela in these really, you know, thought out ways, but I'm a proper chav from Liverpool, and I love Jamie Carragher.
Fantastic. Love that answer. So that's it for today. Thank you for watching or listening. And big thanks to you, Andy Barr.
No, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the Social Media Show sponsored by NILC. If you'd like to know more about how social media can help your business, organisation or charity, please visit my website at pollingersocial.co.uk, or you can find me on social media at pollingersocial.co.uk.